Today on Maine Calling, artist Eric Hopkins. Nobody paints the Maine sky quite the way Eric Hopkins does. Hopkins lives for sunny, bluebird days, especially those sporting dramatic clouds. He watches those clouds, flies airplanes through them, and paints them from his studio on North Haven Island in Penobscot Bay. That's where he spent his boyhood and where he moved back to 45 years ago. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, Eric Hopkins is our guest. We'll talk about his life's work, not just painting, but also glass blowing and other mediums. When he was young, he studied with glass artist Dale Chihuly and built quite a reputation himself. We'll also discuss how he depends on art to explore life's big questions and cope with grief over two profound losses in his life. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And Highland Green, committed to fostering a resident-driven, active lifestyle community for those 55 and better. HighlandGreenLifestyle.com. And Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com. And North Yarmouth Academy, a 2025 AP Platinum School recognized by College Board, inviting families to tour campus, shadow a student, and explore its new dormitory.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The art of Eric Hopkins is recognizable. He captures the energy and forms of nature, especially islands, sky, and sea, in his paintings, glasswork, and other mediums. Today, we're going to learn more about Eric Hopkins and his creative life. He's our guest today. Hopkins is a Maine artist based in North Haven. He has taught at Haystack Mountain School of Crafts and has exhibited in many Maine museums and galleries, as well as nationally. A film about Eric and his work, Atmospheres, airs this week on Maine Public Television, including tomorrow night at 9 p.m. We invite you to join the conversation. What questions do you have for Eric Hopkins about his life experiences or his creative process? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Just a reminder, our Maine Calling phone number is different than the one for our Maine Public membership drive. That Maine Calling number again, 1-800-399-3566. Eric Hopkins, welcome to Maine Calling. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's great to be here. And I was just thinking back a little bit. There was this thing called ETV when I was a kid. It means educational television. And that was a big deal. No one, you know, we had this, I think, two or three channels. And then this fuzzy black and white TV screen came on, and it was just pretty amazing. And I remember watching Apollo, the whole Mercury space program, and that was a big deal. And I like to think of myself as a Maine artist, an island artist, but more so an American artist. And if you look at the word America, you see who's in the middle there? Eric, E-R-I-C, America. And beyond that, not just the Maine islands, but out in space, we are this one little blue-green marble with white clouds, atmospheres. And that's the island I really truly love, is Island Earth. Really important.
It occurred to me, looking out the window this morning, that this is not an Eric Hopkins kind of day. This is not the day where you get up and race to your studio or race to your boat with your paints, is it?
Right. But, you know, I'm a color guy. I say, if I ain't got light, I ain't got color. But at the same time, there's something kind of enveloping and contained about a gray day like this. I would prefer to go in a studio with a wood stove and doing physical things like with a lot of what's in the atmosphere film, doing wood. And so it's not all paint, it's not all light, it's not all color, but There's a lot of it.
So the sunny bluebird sky days, those are the days for painting, and days like this are for getting other things done.
Yeah, absolutely. And unfortunately, a lot of times living on an island with a ferry boat or something, I might have to schedule doctor, lawyers, dentist things. And 10 times out of nine, they're on the sunny days, followed by 5 days of gray. So, you adapt to it. It's the way it goes.
So I wanted to ask you, those of us who've lived in Maine for a long time and are familiar with your work know that you've been an artist for a long time, but I did not know until I watched the film about you that you were doing art when you were a little kid. Tell me about painting lobster shells. What did those look like? What did you do with them?
Well, I didn't actually paint lobster shells, but going back before that, my father had a party fishing boat. And when I was about four, he would take people out on these fishing parties. And I had two other brothers at the time. And we each got a turn doing something with the old man. And the other guys, they like to go out in the boat, but I love going out in the boat. And my father had like 20 people fishing, and the little kid is it's busy. So he had to keep an eye on me. So he kept me in a bait barrel with my life jacket on so I could be self-contained. And then I finally got my first line overboard, and blue sky, deep blue green water down off Vinyl Haven, the White Islands. And I can see it today as we speak. Just it was just so well visual. It's exciting being there with the old man and all these people with their colorful clothes and my orange life jacket. And I pulled this flipping fresh, brightly colored codfish out of the water and had the pinky purple gills and the speckled yellowy brown spots and silvery colors and a little beard. And wow, that was exciting. And this is something I'm going to take this home and show my mother. But just it, I realized that so much life on that green blue water underneath it, just teeming with life. And so I went home at the end of the day, and it was just this old dead gray fish in the bucket. And I showed my mother. She'd seen a few dead fish before, and not that as excited. But we always had paints around the house and paper. And so I was really disappointed that I had, well, painted and lost the fish had lost the vibrancy, the life. So I painted directly on the fish with my poster paints, and I brought it back to life with color. Color is life. And then my mother made me throw it away a couple days later. She says it's nice, but it stinks. And I had to. And so that was something. That was exciting to be out there to catch the fish. It was exciting or disappointing to lose the life of the fish. It was exciting to bring it back to life. It was disappointing to have to throw it away, but I could create that experience of fish on my paper with my paints. And I sold it for 50 cents at the Summer Library Art Show. That's a lot of penny candy for a 4-year-old. So
Four
I've been doing
years
it.
old. So you're 4 years old when you sold your first painting.
Yeah, four or five. I'm not sure. I can't remember. I don't remember dates back then. It was just one day after another. And but that inspired me. And then the lobster shells, again, we had a fish market, and so I worked the fish market as a little kid. And a lot of the summer ladies didn't want lobster. They wanted lobster meat. And for licensing purposes, even back in the early 60s, we couldn't do that. So I sold them the lobsters. I said, hey, I'll cook them up and pick them out for you. So I do that. And then I had all these shells. So I made these little lobster figures and put them on a seine court. So the body and the tail is inside the body, and the claw is the head, and the knuckles are the legs, and the lobster legs are the arms. And the flippers are feet. I think I've got one in there, but it doesn't show on the radio very well.
Oh my goodness. Eric, you went to art school, and most people know you today as a painter, but you did not focus on painting in art school and soon after. So interesting to learn that you were into glass and glass blowing. What attracted you to glass blowing, and why did you choose that medium? What was it about glass blowing that first appealed to you?
Well, I didn't choose it. It chose me. I was just doing it. I'm an Aries, a fire guy. We go camping out with my cousins and brothers, friends on the island. It's pretty young. I don't think I'd let my kids do that when they were 10 or whatever it was. But we build these hellacious big bonfires in the rocks on the shore. And we take a bottle of Coke with us, that beautiful aqua color, kind of greenish color, and drink the Coke and put it, the bottle, by the edge of the fire. And we kind of eased it in, and it would start slumping and kind of melting. And then take a stick and poke it with, oh, this is exciting, melted glass. And then it would be broken in the morning. And so that was really the inspiration. I got to do things, two things I'm not supposed to do. I got to play with fire and break glass. Hey, how can you beat that when you're 10?
So 10 years old, you were playing with bonfires. Your mother probably had no idea what you were up to. But out of art school, you were working with Dale Chihuly. And for those people who maybe don't know that name, you've clearly seen his work. It's these extraordinary, brightly colored glass artworks that are in museums all over the world, as well as many public spaces. Eric, tell me how that time in your life influenced what came next.
Well, I was a night watchman at Haystack School of Crafts in Deer Isle, probably around 70, 71, 2-ish. And Dale had been there. I had seen glass blowing, well, on Maine Public. And then I knew it was happening right over there, about 10, 15 miles away on Deer Isle. And so I ended up getting a job. Actually, I took a course there first, and then I got a job as night watchman with Fran Merritt, the founding director. And so there was an international session. So Erwin Eich, this German glassblower with generations of glass history, came. And he was not typical gigot glass vase and stuff. He was 60s experimental, breaking the family tradition and doing innovative things. And I liked that. And then I met Chihuly. Ended up getting into RISD and Rhode Island School of Design. And it was just strongly influenced by the space program and Buckminster Fuller and ideas, concepts. Painting was dead. God was dead. Conceptual was like way up in the sky. And so that's how I got started, literally flinging hot glass around, drawing in space, like you probably saw on the film. And that is really how I got started with glass, as experiential and experiencing the molten material. And I think I probably like to play with honey on my toast, you know, kind of dripping that off and writing my name with the honey. And so that's really how I got started.
You've mentioned space a couple times and how influential the space program has been in your life and how deeply you think about not just space, but the sky. And anybody who sees any of your work can tell that Eric Hopkins really looks at the sky. You look at the clouds, not just the color of the sky, but the way the film that's about you is called Atmospheres, where the Earth's atmosphere, that little line of the really bright blue. Is this something that, you know, for your entire career has been a theme? Is this come and gone?
No, it May 61, I heard on the radio, maybe even public if they had it back then, the chief of the country said, oh no, it was in the Weekly Reader, newspaper magazine for kids, said, the chief of the country said, by the end of this decade, it's important to put a man on the moon and return him safely to the Earth. And that was not because it would be easy, but because it was important. And it wasn't just conceptual and theoretical. Let's face it, there was a Cold War going on. That's what it really was all about. It was part of the space race. And right here in Maine, we had Telstar. Sputnik was 57. Oh boy, that was global news, even though we didn't have global news then. But it was, you know, it was a big deal. So that really fired up the president and the country to lead. And that really impressed the heck out of me.
And that never went away. It wasn't a phase in your life to be interested.
I didn't want to be an astronaut. I didn't even think of that. I was just amazed. Like, here it is. I'm on North Haven. Vinyl Haven's a quarter of a mile away. I'd see the moon, this big ball of a moon come up over Vinyl Haven. And then as it got higher in the sky, it would get smaller. And I realized, hey, that's a quarter of a million miles away. And Vinyl Haven is a quarter mile away. And for a 10-year-old to row a quarter mile, it takes something to get there, let alone get off the Earth and into space. I mean, I watched Shepard and those Mercury guys do their thing, John Glenn. But I just followed it. It was just exciting, just interesting. And then when my 5-year-old brother, Stephen, drowned when I was 10 and he was 5, the church lady said, you know, he's died. He's gone to heaven. He lives in the sky now. And I thought, wow, that sky is important. And that was around the same time that Kennedy made that commitment to go to the moon. And I thought those parallels were pretty important.
Well, you mentioned the death of your little brother who you shared a bedroom with. I want to ask you about the role of grief in your work and in your life, but we do have to go to a break. So I need to let everybody know that we're speaking with artist Eric Hopkins. Perhaps you know his work, the amazing aerial paintings of Penobscot Bay. Maybe you know one of his big works that's part of public art projects in places like Maine Maritime Academy. What are your questions for him? The phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back.
Ain't got light, ain't got color, in the words of Eric Hopkins, the painter. I'm Keith Shortall, senior editor here at Maine Public, and I'm here with my colleague, Deputy News Director Susan Sharon, taking just a few minutes out of the main calling program on this first day of our spring fundraising drive to urge, invite, cajole you to show support for this program. Susan, you're familiar with the work of Eric Hopkins. You know,
yes.
These really beautiful, as Jen was pointing out, these colorful aerial shots of this, particularly where I live in the mid-coast in Penobscot Bay, the islands, when you see one, you know, oh, that's Eric Hopkins. So it's really interesting, though, to hear him talk about his early life and how he came to discover art and some of his feelings about much larger topics. You know, it's always really interesting to get a look inside someone who is a creator like that. Show support for this program. The number, 1-800-866-1475. Now remember, that's different than the main calling number. The number to support this program today, right here, right now, 1-800-866-1475. Or you can go online at mainepublic.org.
And you can call Maine Calling with your questions for Eric Hopkins, but just use the different number.
Different number.
They're not set up for the pledges. This
That's
one is.
Right.
That's right. 1-800-866-1475. You know what, Keith? What I love about hearing conversations like this one with Eric Hopkins is it's the joy of radio when you get like really go down the rabbit hole of listening, and you can picture it when Jen is asking him about how he paints the sky or he's talking about his love of space. It's just one of the things that makes a call-in show like this so great, and so great on the radio, because to me, that, you know, they always say, oh, it's the theater of the mind, but it is. You're with him, you're with Jen, you're going along the path and listening to a person's story, and we don't have that kind of engagement all the time.
That's true. Maine Calling, you know, I think it's been 16 years about since we brought in Jonathan Smith, the producer of this program, who had come from the Diane Rehm show, and his motto was good guest, you know, interesting guest, interesting show. And I think this is an example of that. You know, if you have someone with Eric Hopkins' life experience and his creative abilities and you connect them with the entire state of Maine, I think you're doing something worthwhile. The number, 1-800-866-1475, or online at mainepublic.org.
We'll be back to that wonderful interview in just a second, but this is the business of public radio. We just come to you a few times a year. You've probably heard about the federal funding issue that public radio has had this past year, and people have questions about that. We hear from listeners who want to know, how is Maine Public doing with the federal funding cuts? And the answer is, things are going well, but the work's not done. The work is never done. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call. You know, if you're a supporter of Maine Calling, this is the place you come in to tune into every weekday to hear Maine stories and Maine voices, like the one you're hearing today with Eric Hopkins.
Yeah, and you know, you can do this. It's easy. You can become an Evergreen friend. We like to promote this because it's an ongoing monthly donation at whatever, you know, level works for you. Maine Public it ensures that this product, the service, comes to you. It helps us plan to our programming. It helps us plan our fiscal year. So make your gift now. If you already are an Evergreen member, thank you. But you could also maybe up your monthly donation.
That's right. You set the amount. That's the beautiful thing about it. It's convenient, and you set the amount at whatever's comfortable for you. 1-800-866-1475, and thank you.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. My guest today, Maine artist Eric Hopkins, American artist Eric Hopkins. We're talking with him about his work from paintings of Maine islands to his glassblown creations. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you want to ask him? You can send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now is Dale Shearholt. He is a documentary filmmaker who often features renowned artists, and he made that film, Atmospheres, about Eric Hopkins, that will air this week on Maine Public Television, including tomorrow night at 9. Thanks so much for calling in, Dale.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer.
I understand it was a bit of a journey to get this film made, that you started it about a decade ago and there was some stopping and starting. Tell us the saga.
Yeah, we started filming in 2017. And I had been away from Maine. I did completed a few films in California. And Eric was a great subject to get back into Maine with. And we'd known each other for many years and had even talked a little bit about doing a film throughout the years. So we started filming in 2017. We filmed for about a year and a half. And then COVID hit shortly after, in the middle of post-production. We had pretty much wrapped filming, but still raising money as part of the process of doing independent documentary films. But COVID kind of slowed everything down, and everything got put on hold. But finally, I said, we got to get back into this. And I jumped back into the editing room and started cutting the film together. And we finally had our first official premiere over on the island of North Haven in 2022. So a normal film takes a year, maybe a year and a half, and this one was a bit of a longer journey, but well worth the wait, and very happy with the success we've had with it.
What was it about Eric and Eric's work that compelled you to make the film in the first place?
Well, I was looking for a subject to come back to Maine to work. As I mentioned, I'd been in California doing some films, and Eric and I had known each other for several years. And over the years, my style of documentary filmmaking had changed more so from dates and facts and places to, I like to say, an experiential nature. I always felt that what was most interesting for me to convey to the subject was the experience of being with an artist, what it's like being, you know, in their studio, in their life, and try to simulate for the audience what my experience was. I figure all the other things they can look up on Wikipedia, but let's get a sense of who this person is, what their energy's like. And I knew there would be no subject better than Eric to take that to its fullest extent. I've been moving that way more and more and more, really working on what I say, the experiential part of my films. And I knew Eric was a great choice for that because Eric is full of life. He's open. He's accessible. And I'm sure your listeners can hear. I mean, he's there. He's real. And I had every sense that that would work in the film. And I think it did.
Well, Dale, thank you. Congratulations. I'm so glad that it's airing again on Maine Public Television. And the first time tomorrow night at 9. Eric, anything you want to say before I say goodbye to Dale?
Yeah, sure. I think the big thing is the element of time. Dale and I knew each other basically when I moved to Rockland about 2006. He was starting to do films, I believe, around 2009. We talked about it, kind of coffee shop talk. And, hey, yeah, maybe we should, you want to do a film sometime? Well, that was 2009, 17. I'm not too good at math, but it took a while. And the whole project took a while. And I think that's really important, the whole sense of time and timing. And that's something in the paintings, too, that, driving across country, looking in the Grand Canyon, I said, that's all about time. And geology, granite, pillow lava on these islands, it's all about time, and it's all about space. So Dale, I think, captured that very well.
Dale, thank you. Dale Shearholt. Is the director and producer of the documentary Atmospheres. It airs on Maine Public Television this week, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And joining us now is Carl Little. He is an art critic and author of numerous art books. He's also a freelance writer and poet. Carl, thanks as always for being a part of Maine Calling.
Oh, totally my pleasure. I love connecting with Eric. Whenever I see him, I smile.
Well, you wrote a book about Eric Hopkins and his work 15 years ago. Why did you choose Eric Hopkins as a subject?
Well, it's, you know, he has such a wonderful perspective on Maine and the landscape here. I mean, I was thinking about him the other day. I was at the top of Acadia Mountain looking out at the Cranberry Isles, and I said, oh, that's Eric Hopkins. You know, the way he captures the curvature of the earth, what he calls the physics of bent light. I love that. And I'm always reminded, looking at his work, of a stanza from Elizabeth Bishop's famous poem, North Haven. She writes, the islands haven't shifted since last summer, even if I'd like to pretend they have, drifting in a dreamy sort of way, a little north, a little south, or sidewise, and that they're free within the blue frontiers of bay. And that's the feeling I get from Eric's paintings, this sort of this sense of the wonder of the world we live in. I also love the fact, and it really comes out in the film, how much Eric appreciates the earth. You know, I mean, there's just a sense, you know, that he's just looking at it all the time and loving it. And I want to be the first one right here to nominate Eric to go on the next Artemis flight to the moon. After all, it is art amiss. Just to do a little bit of wordplay there.
And Eric loves wordplay too. Eric, what do you think of Carl's idea? You want to go?
I think it's great. I did realize at some time, I actually applied to the space shuttle program when they were talking about citizens in space.
Wow.
But after the Challenger explosion, that program was just kaput. So I've always been interested in that. But that's really what led me to flying, was I realized I will not be able to get to the moon right away. And so I'm started taking flying lessons. I'm not flinging molten glass around doing orbits with hot glass, conceptual things. As soon as I started flying around Penobscot Bay and looking down and out through the atmosphere and learning more about the physics, not just of bent light, but aviation physics. Hey, it's what it's all about. And that's from geology, geography, the whole works. And yeah, I'd love to go, but I'm happy to, I could be a citizen observer in the jet planes and paper cubs. And I do. So.
Carl, I'm going to ask you a very serious question now. You're an art scholar, a scholar of Maine art history, and you've also written books that, you know, are historic, you know, look back at the history of Maine art. And I'm wondering where you think Eric Hopkins fits into the culture and history of art in Maine.
Well, I think he's, you know, he's a descendant directly of John Maron, and he often quotes Maron, and I think that's very appropriate. I mean, Maron was an action painter who was responding to the landscape in a very similar way. And I know in the film, Eric quotes Maron. This is a wonderful quote. He says, how to paint the landscape. First you have your bow to the landscape, then you wait, and if the landscape bows to you, then and only then can you paint the landscape. And I think that Eric is bowing to the landscape all the time and getting bows back from it. I also like the Van Gogh quote, which is appropriate to Eric's work. One can never study nature too much and too hard. He's just always looking.
Carl Little, you too live on an island. Do you think Eric Hopkins' work has special resonance for island dwellers?
I think it does. You know, the other thing I wanted to share with you was I was doing some work on the lawn yesterday with my wife, and we had several bags of that Coast of Maine mulch, which has the Eric Hopkins painting on it. And I just think it's so appropriate. I mean, you know, the putting your hands into the earth and trying to create something with this mulch, and having Eric's painting there are so beautiful, the blues and the islands, and he's so generous in every way.
Well, Carl Little, thank you so much for calling in. Carl Little, I'm sure you know his name, is an author of many books on art in Maine, but also a poet. Thank you, Carl, for being a part of Maine Calling today. Eric Hopkins' response to what Carl has said about you?
Well, absolutely. I agree 100%. And one thing, he lives on MBI. I spent some time as artist-in-resident at Acadia National Park and have done a lot of work from there, flying over. And I write, I use words as well. And there's something about, I was flying over Penobscot Bay at 5,280 feet, mile high, height of Mount Katahdin, and I could see Friendship, Penobscot Bay, Rockland, Bucksport, all the way around to MDI, and that's how high, thick the ice was then. And I just realized, you know, this is the center of the universe for Carl and me and many other people. It's just, there's so many people here, and people, what makes this place as well is good old Mama Nature, and big influence, Buckminster Fuller, John Maron, Marsden Hartley, so many, Louise Nevelson, Rockland. You know, I grew up with Louise Nevelson's work in her brother's hotel, the Thorndike Hotel. I was about, 3.5 feet tall. That was sort of the waiting room for the ferry, the sardine carrier ferry. And weather shut the boat down, and my two brothers and I were standing there, kind of making fun of these black boxes full of identifiable objects. Piece of a bow of a boat, an old lobster trap, a negative space cut out for a boat. And there was something mysterious, magical, very common as well. And it was organized in these boxes. And, you know, I thought, wow, Louise Nevelson, she's like an art goddess. And I didn't realize, as a woman artist and from Maine and Ukraine, she was not very well liked or approved of. And that took a long time for her to get recognition. And then I was walking down, I think, Fifth Avenue or Madison Avenue, and seen a big Louise Nevelson sculpture. And I said, yep, that started out right here in Rockland. And likewise, Andy Wyeth. I remember going to the Farnsworth. There's this old lady sprawled out in a blueberry field. And this old weathered house up on the top. Hey, there's Christina's World. And so between Christina's World, Louise Nevelson, Blackie Langley, and the Skowhegan Indian and all these other, that's a pretty diverse group of artists. And then let's not forget.
And I'm thinking your child, and these are real people in your life, and you knew what was possible. It wasn't as though you're a child from a small island in Maine and this was not possible. It was possible to become a big time artist and be from where you were from.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do a lot of talks, and I was somewhere, I think at the Boston Museum, or maybe Farnsworth, and I did my show and tell, and this ancient woman in the audience said, "Oh, I'm so envious of you. I lived up on the Upper East Side, and my parents took us to the Metropolitan Museum every weekend, and we got to see all the Egyptians' works and all the everything, but you got to see real artists." And you know, that's Maine. That's Maine, being able to have access the real deal. We have a lot of real deals here. Another inspiration, Buckminster Fuller, you know, another 10 or 12 miles away on Bear Island. Big deal.
We're speaking with artist Eric Hopkins on Maine Calling. We need to take another quick break. What are your questions for him? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, or send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. Again, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back.
And good morning, everyone. I'm Susan Sharon, Deputy News Director here at Maine Public Radio. We're just taking a quick break from Maine Calling to do the business of public radio. I'm joined by my colleague, Senior Editor Keith Shortall. 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call to support Maine Calling and all the other programs you tune into here at Maine Public Radio each and every day.
Really love the Eric Hopkins is talking a minute ago about all of the art and the people that populate that's Midcoast Maine, which is where I live, and it just brought it back to me. You know, my grandparents were caretakers of the Wyeth farm. My parents were friends of Blackie and Helen Langley, so we would be at their house and they would come to our house. Growing up, I didn't realize any of this, that these were important artists and we were just living among them. But Eric just reminds us all that, you know, Maine is this beautiful place, but it's also the people, in this case, this incredible artistic force that was, you know, that is still anchored in that section of the state. A great reminder to show support for Eric Hopkins and this program. 1-800-866-1475, or you can show your support by going online to mainepublic.org.
I think what's so great about Maine Calling and the call-in idea, Keith, is just that, you know, in Maine, it's 1 degree of separation. There's no three. It's just the one. 1 degree of separation. But this kind of a program reminds you of the connection people have with each other. And just with, you know, you can go down and listen to the interview with an artist like Eric Hopkins, or maybe some other day it's a newsmaker, or it's an astronaut, or you never know. You never know who it's going to be. But the joy of it is that you get to call the Maine Calling phone number, not the number to give this pledge, and, you know, have a basically be part of the conversation. And that's pretty cool thing to be able to do, and a long time thing to be able to do on the radio.
It really it's really connecting your name. You know, Maine is, we all know this, we say this a lot, but there's, you know, a million point something people. It's like the size of
1.3.
a small, it's not a huge city. It's like a small city, but spaced out into an enormous piece of land. And so this helps us to connect with each other, in a way that we identify with as Mainers and share our thoughts and have conversations with these anchors like Eric Hopkins and others. Show your support for this program, for the idea of Maine Calling, 1-800-866-1475 or mainepublic.org.
And when you donate right now, any amount, you will be entered to win 1 of 5 round-trip ferry passes from Bar Harbor to Yarmouth, Nova Scotia, courtesy of Bay Ferries, operators of the CAT high-speed car ferry. So that's a really good incentive to call if you've been putting it off, 1-800-866-1475 to win one of those trips. That would be fun.
That would be a lot of fun. The number, 1-800-866-1475.
Thank you.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, we talk with artist Eric Hopkins. You know his work. He uses watercolors, glass, mixed media, and photography to express what he sees around him, oftentimes including the scenery of Midcoast Maine, and oftentimes from the air. Artist Eric Hopkins is our guest for this hour. If you have comments or questions, send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also call 1-800-399-3566. We have an email here from Spike. Eric is a great painter, but also a great glass artist. Once, when we were younger, he gave me some beautiful glass whelk-like shells. But first he broke them because, well, shells break. Still have them. Do you remember that, Eric?
Oh, yeah. I've broken a lot of shells, broken a lot of glass. And that was, again, from living on this little island, sitting on the beach, taking a pause for the cause and looking, how did those spirals get to be? And then what I really liked is looking in, that sometimes they break a hole in it and you could see the form spiraling around. And then I went down to Brown University when I was at RISD and did a invertebrate zoology course, seeing how those cells turned into shells and whelks. And that was pretty amazing. So not just seeing things on the beach, but not just in the sky, but in the microscope as well. And that's really important. And yes, Spike, I remember that. We did a lot of stuff together. And Spike was very inspirational and influential in flying. He had a Piper Cub, and we went around the thoroughfare on a very beautiful July day, and with the windows open, and it was like early July, colors were just expanding. So I wear glasses. And so he did a steep turn over Mouse Island at the end of Hopkins Point on Vinyl Haven. And it was just fantastic, around and around and around. And the wind almost took my glasses off. And he was flying, thank God. And but that whole experience was so exciting. And, you know, you got to be excited to do something. I can't just, you know, if you gave me a picture of, say, from the top of Cadillac, I couldn't paint that. But again, I've talked about time and the time spent on the beach, the time spent in the microscope, the time spent looking at the sky. I went to high school in Rockland, and I spent a lot of time looking out the window, watching the gulls feed off the athletic field. That's where I learned stuff. And but I want to go back to where we left off a little bit. My influences, people often ask, okay, who are your favorite artists? Who inspired you the most without thinking even a breath? The cave guys, the original people.
Yeah.
They're serious. They were
doing
significant, majorly significant. And right here in North Haven, we had a lot of Native Americans coming down the Penobscot River, setting up shop here at the Turner Farm and other places. And this was their center of the universe as well in the summer. And there was swordfish here, and, you know, we'd go walk on the beach and they're little flakes of flint. And so that's a big influence because it's intuitive, it's natural, it gets you right here in the ticker and the brain. And, you know, it's a spirit. It's the native spirit, a human spirit, and spirit in the sky. That's really important to me. And getting back to Maine Calling, I was listening. I don't listen to the radio when I'm working. I have to stop and listen. So the other day when Terry Tempest Williams was there, I had to stop because I'm looking at the screen, but, you know, I have to listen. And so Terry Tempest Williams here at Harvard Divinity School, Utah, and she came across, I can't remember what book it was in, but she was looking at, she went to, I believe, the Cranberry Islands and found out that she was related to the Bunker family there. So here she is, this spiritual guru, brilliant woman from Utah, and a real natural person whose dad was made pipelines for oil wells. And she came here, she's related to Maine.
Eric, I wanted to get back to something I said that I was going to talk about earlier in the program. You mentioned that your little brother died. You also lost a son. And when he was 20 years old, I think so many people would just be devastated by those losses and the grief. Yet you are a person who emanates positive energy and light. And I'm wondering how and why you're able to be that person.
Well, grief, that's two sides of the same coin. Grief on one side, joy on the other. And when my little brother died, I didn't know anything about dying and all that. I know a lot of people have died. I know my goldfish died, my guinea pigs died, and I killed my fish. So there's nothing new to me, to humans, about grief. I'm not the only one in the world has grief. Every single person I know has had a lot of loss. It's what you do with it. So I connect. I have these dream connections. When my son Evan died, I was living on MBI, and I was sitting there. My former wife had called and said, Evan's been in an accident. Just want you to know, you might have to go to Rockland, to the hospital, or Bangor, or whatever. And I'll let you know. Well, 2 or 3 hours, excuse me, later, I sat there by the fireplace, and I knew he had gone. And I heard this. I didn't hear it. I didn't see it. I felt this voice say, "Your daredevil child is a grown-up angel tonight." And I knew. And I accepted that fact because he was broadcasting still. Just because you're dead doesn't mean you're gone. And my brother is gone. I deal with these guys, my father, my mother, all these guys, generally speaking, that have gone beyond. They're still there. And I don't say he was or they were. I say he is. And they still is here. And Chief Seattle said something similar. He said, you don't see me, but I'm still here and I'm part of the thing. And just like I was saying about the Native Americans here at Turnip Farm, I've gone down there in the dark woods and I feel it. And so I have what I call downloads. And some people think, oh, the guy's crazy talking to dead guys in the sky. And oh, he's all woo-woo. But you know what? We're all woo-woo. A lot of it is just blinded. So
we just have a few seconds left, Eric. What are you working on now? I know in the film, which was made a few years ago, you were doing a lot of work on wood in which it had multi dimensions. Is that still the kind of work you're doing?
That's still a part of it, but also roads. I love driving across the country and seeing the roads and the curves and the vistas opening up. And just got back from Columbia Falls, the Smelt Festival, and just seeing different places with new eyes. Very important.
Well, Eric Hopkins, what a pleasure to have you on Maine Calling today. Eric Hopkins, a Maine-based artist. He lives on North Haven. And the documentary film about him, Atmospheres, airs on Maine Public Television tomorrow, the next day, and the next day. We've got 3 airings. Today's sound engineer, Jane Donahue. A Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. This is Maine Public Radio.
One of the many great things about the magic of radio is it brings people together. And we just heard for the past hour from Eric Hopkins, a really interesting guest and, of course, a talented painter of Maine. I'm Keith Shortall, senior editor here with my colleague Susan Sharon, taking just a few minutes out of the programming here again on this first day of our spring fundraising drive, urging you to take stock of what you've just heard, think about what's important to you and what and how you want to support that. And the best way to support that is by calling this number, 1-800-866-1475, or online at mainpublic.org. Susan, this is what's sort of different and interesting about Maine Calling as a program.
That's right. I mean, you know, you count on this program each and every day. You may not ever know unless you look at the schedule what's coming up, but you can quickly become engrossed in the conversation, and that is really the beauty of radio. That's why we work here, Keith.
What are the many
reasons? 1-800-866-1475 is the number to call. You know, and we've been talking about it all this year about the federal funding cuts. People ask me, my friends ask you, I'm sure yours do, Keith, what does it mean for public radio? And what we like to say is we have a really dedicated audience. We're very fortunate in Maine. We cover the state, and the audience supports that coverage. But it's really, it's this old-fashioned model, like an old-fashioned barn raising. 1-800-866-1475 is your part to lift that barn and put in the planks to keep her sturdy.
Yeah, I do get the questions just out with people saying, are you guys okay? You
right.
know, it's very sweet. Yeah. And of course, we are. We're more engaged than ever on the mission at hand. But we do need your help. We continue to need your help. And thank you to those of you who have stepped up in the wake of these changes. Thanks to all of you who have been with us for years. Thanks to those of you who are joining us maybe for the first time today as members. Thank you. We're going to keep coming to you and asking you to support this programming because we know that you depend on it and we know that you appreciate it. 1-800-866-1475 or at mainpublic.org.
It's just not a settled matter is really the answer. It's not a settled matter. We have had the great fortune of welcoming more than 9,000 new members, a record high for Maine Public this year. That's cool.
Great.
We would love to welcome more. To get this job done. And you can do that. You can offer your support by calling 1-800-866-1475. And Keith, you know, if you donate right now, we said this before, but if you donate right now any amount, you will be entered to win 1 of 5 round-trip ferry passes from Bar Harbor to Yarmouth, Nova Scotia, courtesy of Bay Ferries, operators of the CAT, high-speed car ferry, which would be a very cool thing to do, given the gas prices situation.
Yeah, that sounds like a fun trip. And
yes,
of course,
it does.
Yeah. And it's sort of a thank you, but really what's most important is that you become a member to join us, to join this experiment, really, that we've been doing for, you know, 60-odd years and continue to, and hope to continue to in a robust way. But as, you know, Eric Hopkins needs light to have color, you know, you're kind of our light so that we can continue to be vibrant. 1-800-866-1475.
I like what you did there.
It took me a while, but I got there finally.
The very best way that you can support this public radio station is becoming an Evergreen friend. And maybe you're already one, so you know the benefit of that. For the station, the benefit is that it allows us to do planning, to know how much there is, to purchase the programming, which, by the way, are expensive. But also the cool thing for you is that you set the amount, whatever's comfortable for you. You set the amount and you can support Maine Public Radio on an ongoing monthly basis. More than half of our supporters, Keith, are Evergreen friends.
Yeah.
So consider doing that. And if you are an Evergreen friend, please consider maybe increasing the amount you give just a little bit. That would be so awesome.
Yeah, and consider doing an electronic funds transfer. Some of you may give us a card number. That's great. Thank you. But we save a lot on processing by having you get the money right out of your bank account with electronic funds transfer, EFT. And you can get information about how to do that on our website. So that's a great option, and it's helpful for us. The number, 1-800-866-1475 or at mainpublic.org.
All Evergreen friends automatically qualify for Maine PBS Passport, and that allows you to stream hundreds of your favorite PBS and Maine Public Television programs whenever you want. So that's pretty cool. It's like unlocking the vault to catch up on your favorite latest episodes of the PBS News Hour or to learn something new from Nature or Nova or whatever programs like that you like.